And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 24th, 2019. Today we are joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing this fine June day, Mariah?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We've actually had kind of a gruesome June here in Massachusetts. A lot of gray days.
Yeah. Good for the plants.
Good for the plants. This is true. I have one small cherry tomato growing in the porch pot of tomato plant outside, so I'm happy for that.
There you go.
Anyway, this has been one heck of a news week. I mean, there's so many things going on, such disparate and interesting issues that would require full shows to really drill down into any one of them. But I thought we could go through kind of a hit list of the things that have popped up this past week, just so that people are aware of the breadth of things that are interesting to talk about in the climate sphere. Okay? So here you go. You ready? You get your catcher's mask on? It's a baseball reference. Okay. First of all, this past weekend, this few days ago, was a holiday in America, a little less appreciated than you'd like, but a holiday in America called Juneteenth. And it turns out that Juneteenth is the day, I think it officially happened on June 19th, but it was the day that the U.S. Army, at the end of the Civil War, 1865, 2 full years after the Emancipation Proclamation, finally made it into Texas and basically had the military authority, and they owned the place. The slaves were on the plantation. The people were set free. And it was a big day, Juneteenth. And it is a holiday that quite honestly, ought to be more widely celebrated. It's only come up for me, of course. I can't pretend that I've known about it for many years, but I've seen it now a couple of years running. It's a good thing. The occasion of Juneteenth is an interesting one, and what I'm going to refer to is our author, Marie Anais Hegler, who is a wonderful commenter on climate issues. She wrote an article in Medium, actually from last December, making, let me just read a little bit of what she wrote, and we'll put up a link. She talks about, you know, in the Old South, beatings, hangings, tarrings and featherings, rapes, etc., that are all can only be called crimes against humanity, right? But she says the earth suffered too. The earth suffered too. The same dangerous shift in thinking that allowed one human being to dehumanize, demean, and exploit another for profit was applied to the land at the exact same time. Black bodies in the southern earth simultaneously became unfeeling objects from which one could extract endlessly and mercilessly. She says this brutal system fueled the antebellum economy, which bankrolled the Industrial Revolution, which launched today's climate crisis. The dots are all there, aching for connection. It's just interesting. I mean, I just urge you to read her article. It's an interesting connection. And we celebrate Juneteenth, right, as a great day in American history.
It should definitely be something where we get the day off and everyone actually really does think about it and recognize it. Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate her connection. This is the same author that wrote the article which talked about how I don't care if you're an environmentalist, and she really pointed out how the corporations are the ones that have done so much to pollute the climate. And it's not individual efforts to blame. And here's this other sort of similar idea where, you know, people are being treated as resources, right? And we don't value the resources, and we're not valuing the lives of people, and how, you know, each one is a step that we should be paying attention to and addressing. And the fact that Juneteenth popped up on my phone as a holiday, which is great, but I don't think there's a lot of people out there who know. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people that know
it. I think
it,
right, perhaps in certain, more in some circles than in others, right?
So. Yeah, but it should be something that is nationally recognized. It should be something that is talked about in a much bigger way where we recognized the lack of humanity in some of our actions and righted that.
No, there's a fascinating history. And I think, again, Maria, I hope I pronounced your name right, Marie Anise Heglar. She's really a voice, has come into her own. And it's if you don't follow her, you should. And we put up the link to that article. Well, I'll stick it in this the next blog. Because that's second article you referred to, Mariah, is also a great article. Well, there's another thing that happened this past week, which is not a national holiday. In fact, it's a national disgrace. The Trump administration has been working overtime with the new people at EPA. So you remember the clown at the EPA? I can't even remember his name now. Who was the guy who was at EPA before who had the bulletproof van and the light on his van? And
Scott Pruitt?
Scott Pruitt.
Scott Pruitt, right.
So he's gone. They actually got a smart guy in there now. And this smart guy has been working very hard for the last couple of years to basically overturn the Obama Clean Power Plan. So if you remember, the Obama Clean Power Plan was put up and all the red state attorney generals went to the Supreme Court, right? So the Obama Clean Power Plan was a plan to limit pollution, would probably address coal plants first because they're the most polluting. It was promulgated. The red state attorney general ran to the Supreme Court to try and get an injunction. So this guy named Scalia, right, sends out an injunction halting the Obama Clean Power Plan on Friday, and he goes for a duck hunting thing and forgets his CPAP device and dies that weekend, right? And so Mr. Scalia passes away, and then all bad things have happened from that with Merrick Garland and whatnot. Anyway, long short, the Obama Power Plan, the Clean Power Plan, has been held in abeyance by the Supreme Court since that time, almost 3 years ago. Trump has come along with a new plan, and a new plan is much more forgiving, and for the following reason. The Obama Clean Power Plan posited the idea that pollution, that the EPA had the authority to regulate pollution across large areas and not just inside the fence of a power plant, right? An important legal distinction, right? Up till the Obama plan, everything that the EPA did for a power plant had to be on the footprint of the power plant itself, right? But Obama interpreted the Clean Air Act to allow them to put state limits on total emission and work backwards from there. Trump, of course, has come along and gutted that idea and said, the EPA can only work, quote unquote, inside the fence of a power plant, has been very generous with the existing coal plants to let them continue 3 years to write a plan before they decide to do anything. It's all very forgiving. The dangerous part of it is that if the blue state attorney generals sue over this power plant and bring it all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decides in favor of the Trump administration that the EPA can only interpret the Clean Air Act as allowing them to act, quote unquote, inside the fence of a power plant, then that will limit future intellectually strong, sane administrations of the country. It'll take that tool away from them. So it's really kind of a big deal, and it's not clear how best to approach this. I mean, it's just another example of the debacle of the Trump administration. Mariah, did I explain it? Is that more or less coherent, what I was trying to say? Did you get it, or did I leave everybody behind?
No, I mean, I think that that's definitely warrants concern. You know, I was just trying to remember the because I know there's some things that should protect us from that happening at the Supreme Court, right? I don't know all of the legal passages there, but you know, the not the do no harm principle, but there's this the endangerment findings, right? Shouldn't that be something that would come out in all of this too?
The endangerment finding was again what was a finding in a court case driven by actually called Massachusetts versus the EPA, where the Supreme Court decided that, in fact, carbon dioxide was a pollutant and that the EPA, since it had made an endangerment finding, had to, legally, was obligated to reduce carbon emissions. Okay, so fine. But then the question comes, what is the mechanism for doing that? What is the method? So I think even Wheeler, the new bad guy at the EPA, says, oh yeah, carbon dioxide's a problem. The endangerment finding stands, but the plan to address that is going to be by letting every coal-powered plant do what the heck it wants for the next 3 years, and that's our plan, right? And that's, I think that's the scary part. There's a possibility that these guys could next decide to try and reverse the endangerment finding, which would then be another.
That's part of the Clean Air Act, right?
It's driven by the Clean Air Act. Yes. Yeah. So I mean, it's all really.
I mean, it's just, I guess what my sort of point, I'm kind of dancing around the details, but to me there's this point that if, you know, burning coal kills people, right? Like, I mean, we have all of these problems with air pollution and all of that. There's some way to stop this.
Well, I'm playing, you know, I read. So the current EPA wants to minimize the deaths from carbon pollution, okay? They want to minimize the deaths from carbon pollution. That is to say, not minimize the real deaths. They want to minimize the counted deaths that go into the calculations. So what they have done is to say that they're prorating the deaths by saying that if the carbon pollution is below a certain level, that is not counted in the social cost of carbon. And the way it was explained to me, the way I read it, was saying that suppose you're counting all deaths in traffic accidents. Right? You say, okay, we're only going to count the deaths that happen over 65 miles an hour because that's breaking the speed limit. If you're in an accident and die at 45 miles an hour, we're not going to count that one. Right? So this intermediate level of pollution where you're going a little too fast for the circumstance in your car, but the carbon pollution is there, but it's not over this limit, or that doesn't get counted into the social cost of carbon. It's one more way these people are corrupting the rules of the calculation. Wow. I know you're searching for a good news good news story here, but man, it's grim. Mm. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. Trump, we're going to fight back on the Trump clean power, well, the affordable power plan is what it's Orwellian. Okay, next item, Weymouth. I want to direct everyone to Weymouth. Weymouth Compressor, natural gas compressor in the town of Weymouth, just south of Boston, right in the middle of a very busy area with schools and kids and homes and all kinds of things. They want to put in a big industrial plant to pressurize carbon, natural gas, so that it can continue to flow up to Canada and be exported. Right? Bad circumstance. There's an article by a reporter, your name escapes me right now, but it's from Earthwhile.
It's Miriam Wasser.
Miriam Wasser. Excellent article that sort of lays out what's otherwise a confusing story. Right, so the Weymouth compressor story has not gotten the kind of press it deserves, so it's hard to give a narrative of what has transpired. The Boston Globe is not doing a good job of covering it. Someone has said it's because John Henry is... owns oil stocks or something. But anyway, Globe's not really telling the story. Miriam Wasser did an excellent job of just detailing where we are and the surprising twists and turns in it. We had a show a few weeks ago about the twists and turns of the Weymouth compressor story, not the least of which being that the Massachusetts DPA dropped a, 500-page report in the middle of the hearing, literally into the laps of the people that are trying to stop the compressor in a very unfair way. And what's happened is that the Massachusetts DEP person who's trying to decide on this air quality permit has delayed that decision for more days. It's a good thing. More and more information comes out that there are carcinogens in the air near Weymouth already. But I highly urge you to try and catch up on that story. by reading the link. We'll put it in the blog post. I guess what's interesting for me is that here in Massachusetts, Governor Baker has the real authority. If he wanted to put an end to this circumstance and this compressor, he could do it pretty much by fiat. He could say, you know, we're not going to give this permit. Game's over. Lights out. Everybody go home. He has not done that. Almost all the other politicians in the Weymouth, South Shore area are opposed to this. Mr. Baker is not. It's unclear why. But at the same time, Mr. Baker got an award. It's kind of a mixed message. Baker does these things that would seem on the surface to be good. I mean, it's this sort of cut the baby in half kind of idea where everyone gets a little bit of goody and everyone's satisfied. I mean, he got an award from the Environmental Business Council for all of his for some of his work. Certainly, we have on this show talked about doubling the offshore wind turbine industry here in Massachusetts. I mean, Baker has allowed that to go forward. Baker is supporting. Go ahead.
Yeah, it went down to Washington, right, and gave a big speech about the importance of addressing climate change, which is powerful coming from a Republican governor.
Yeah, I mean, and he is currently focused on a resiliency, what's called resiliency funding, to giving money to help make the state more resilient against the effects of climate change. But underlying all that, he won't address the causes of climate change, which are things like the Weymouth compressor plant. And furthermore, recently, the Baker administration has taken to trying to change the regulation for what's called biomass, because we've talked about this in past shows, but biomass is basically burning wood to make electricity. And the main beneficiary of a change in the regulations would be a power plant near Springfield, which is near an environmental justice community. And these people have been fighting against this wood-burning power plant in their neighborhood for years. They're continuing to fight. Approval of this, of the biomass, would be an environmental injustice. Now, it turns out the good news is that the period for comment on the regulations has been extended, mostly due to popular demand of people like you. So I would say if you get a chance, check out the link that I'll put in the blog and go make a comment on the why you think biomass, that is to say burning wood and stuff to make electricity, is a bad idea. Trust me, it's a bad idea for many reasons. So there you go. That's the third one, Mariah. We got the next one I just wanted to mention. So this is the hit list of all the kind of crazy stuff floating around. There's a city in the country of India, and it's called Chennai, Chennai. I think it's like 6 million people, which is probably a pretty small city for India, but a lot of people. Turns out that recently that city, through a combination of mismanagement, of poor development, mismanagement, and a drought, changes in the monsoon pattern, this city of 6 million people ran out of water, right? So you can just imagine the circumstances of having 6 million people run out of water with, again, climate as a distal cause, right? There's lots going on, a lot of reasons why it would be, there's poor management, right, that have nothing to do with climate. But the fact that the rains don't come on time, again, a precursor of things to come. And the final thing to get off my chest, we touched on this before as well, but over the last few weeks, Massachusetts has drifted into a transit crisis. We've had several, we've had two train derailments on the Red Line, right? Bad news, train derailments. And from what I can see, they don't even know how they're going to find the antiquated pieces of equipment to get the Red Line back together. They don't have a projected date to return to full service. That's a consequence of, for my money, long-term mismanagement. People have not put, the state government has not put money into the transit authority. Again, this might rewind to Governor Baker. How come he hasn't spent more money on this? But I guess I just want to point out again that we should be thinking about things like the Red Line derailment and why the trains don't run on time as a climate issue. Right, because having effective mass transit that gets people where they need to be will reduce climate emission, will change, will improve our status versus greenhouse gas emissions. And so this is an opportunity. This crisis that we're having is also the opportunity to start thinking about what to do about it. I hope that we can, in days coming, have a more thoughtful discussion about that. But it just is this flashing red light that says, hey, here's an issue that at its subtext, again, is climate. You need to think about it. Right, Mariah?
Yeah, we'll make our next show all about the opportunities, right?
That's right. Instead of just the bad news here. Well, look, we got to put it down there. That's my strange list of climate issues for this week. I'm sure that by the time next week rolls around, there'll be another list of strange and funky issues that have to do with climate, right? Let me say, Mariah, that we will thank you for listening so attentively, Mariah. You're very kind. You're like...
Always interesting.
Oh, goodness. So what we'll do is we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. Please tell us, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Tell us what you think ought to be done with the red line. That is to say, should mass transit in Boston be free? Yes or no?
That would be nice.
You can listen to this the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, etc., etc. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the U.S. transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.